Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. My name is Lauren Wells, here with my co-host, Chris Seveny. We're committed to providing you with the knowledge required to build wealth through real estate investing. Tired of consuming content about real estate? Stuck in analysis paralysis? Ready to do your first deal? As a member of our community, you will learn how to go from consuming content to taking that first step into the world of real estate investing. Our show is not about getting rich quick, but about providing you with the knowledge you need to take action. Join us as we speak with experienced investors who share action tips on how to escape the corporate world, start a thriving side hustle in the world of real estate, and go beyond your W-2 or 401k. Welcome, everybody, to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast, where each week we bring you education and information that will help you take your next step in building wealth through real estate. My name is Lauren Wells, and I am not here today with Chris as he is returning from moving his daughter into college this weekend. So, however, I do have another guest, Nicole Garnes, today on the show with us. And on today's episode, what we want to talk about is we want to talk about long-term rentals, out of state, in state, the rehab process, management, and everything in between. Now, this question actually came from someone who is a listener and was interested in learning more about what that process looks like because they've kind of been thinking on pulling the trigger on a long-term rental. So I reached out to Nicole. Full disclaimer, she is my sister. So Nicole is a real estate investor, property manager, mom of three awesome little girls, and active member of her PTSA board. So with that, Nicole, welcome. I kind of introduced you. Do you have anything else that you want to add?
Not really.
So tell me a little bit. Well, I'll kind of give you the background on this. We had, again, someone reach out who was interested in us kind of doing an episode on long-term rentals. And when I think of long-term rentals, you know, that's kind of the background you have, I have, the experience we have. But I think that a lot of people who are watching social media today see you can like easily get a long-term rental, fix it, flip it, either sell it, you're going to be cash flow positive immediately, like kind of paint this like ideal picture of what it looks like. And so the person who had reached out was saying like, I want to know, like, what is it really like? What should I prepare for? Where do I look? They have the funds, but they don't know where to put them, but they know they want to put it in real estate. So I guess kind of to kick it off, why don't you tell me a little bit about like how you started in this and kind of where you're at today portfolio wise?
So I grew up around real estate. Our dad was a realtor broker for our whole life. That's what he did. So I started asking questions, I guess, at a young age, and I always had an interest in real estate. So that kind of benefits me because it's also kind of a passion, I guess, and a job for me. I actually went into insurance after college and realized that it was too corporate. And then I got pregnant and realized I wanted to do something where I could stay home and grow a portfolio and or get passive income so that I could raise my kids and I could be there taking them to and from school and doing all their activities with them. So I knew that I needed something that would give me flexibility, I guess. And that's where real estate kind of came in. I saw that my dad was able to do that. And so I kind of just followed in his footsteps. I started off working with like just in an office as a secretary for a realtor that was pretty big, or he was a broker in my area. And so I was super pregnant, just working and doing like all the paperwork and the background of it to see what like a sales transaction looked like. And I worked for very little pay and did a lot of the grunt work, but it was a good like intro into like the day-to-day of like what a realtor does in the sales world. I learned really quick that I was not into sales and that it seemed like that was a lot of work. So my husband's father passed away and we inherited a farm that was just not producing a lot of income. And so we took that and we saw an opportunity to invest in real estate that would bring us some passive income. And so we sold that and we did that. So that's how we kind of got into it. And we purchased some properties and then rehabbed them and rented them out. And then slowly kind of just grew from there. I currently manage over 100 properties, not all my own, but some are in California, and then I'd say about half the portfolio is in Florida.
Yeah. So I have another question, but before we go there, you can see Nicole and I, we're sisters, but we took very different paths into real estate. Nicole isn't lying when she says she like has asked questions and been interested in real estate since like forever. And like to have that foresight of like, for the listeners who have listened to our previous episodes, it took me actually having kids to then realize I didn't want to be in corporate. I went the full corporate sales tech startup. And Nicole is like always known like, no, man, passive income. That's what I want. Like, I want to be there for everything for my kids. And so she really like graduated college. We both went to the same college and really committed to that. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't see is that, like she said, she did work for very little. She just learned as much as she could before she like took that step. Now, you said you have properties in both California and Florida. So did you start in California? What did that look like?
So I did. The first property I got was kind of during the recession, like all the foreclosures were happening. So I picked up the property in California at a tax deed sale for really cheap. Got priced out pretty much after that.
So, and what year, do you remember what year that was?
2012, I want to say.
Okay. So you're like a decade into this.
Yeah. Since I purchased my first property. Yeah.
And I feel like that's important again to highlight for people to show that it's like, you've been at this for a while and you're like, it wasn't this like overnight success where you're just at 100 managing and 100 units, your own and other people's. Okay. And then you moved into Florida. Now that's super interesting. When you're looking at a state, I think that scares a lot of people because either they don't see the property beforehand or they're not familiar with the area and they're just kind of hearing Florida's a good area or like Tennessee's a great area, whatever it might be. So after you decide to look in Florida, how did you decide like what properties, like kind of what your buy box was, your parameters for buying? Like, and I think it was 2015 when you got started there.
Yeah.
So what was your like, okay, this is my requirement for a home when I'm looking to purchase?
So it's going to be different for everyone. It's going to be different based on the location you're in. So for Florida specific, because there's like hurricanes, there's just different laws. So you need to kind of get familiar with the area you're working in so that you're aware of the environmental factors, the like political factors that are going to affect whatever you're doing. I mean, kind of our general model has always been like lower end rent, long-term rentals. Some people are in it for the appreciation game. I'm in it for the buy, hold, and rent for as long as possible. Obviously, appreciation is a benefit. And that has allowed, the appreciation has allowed me to refi and purchase more. But my goal was to just buy a property, have the return on investment be good, and be able to rent it out long term. We focus on single family detached homes. So again, it's lower end, but you're, which still gives you, or sometimes often more, a better return on investment. And then like for Florida specific, you know, you want something that's block. A frame doesn't do well because of hurricanes. There's certain things you want to look at based on, again, the location you're in. I don't want pools because that adds an extra liability as a renter. So you're looking at things that would increase your liability, I guess. So we do have like a kind of a very specific, you know, we want a single family detached. We want it in a good area. We're looking at the neighborhood. You really kind of have to learn the different neighborhoods of the counties you are in. Because there's going to be worse neighborhoods and there's going to be better neighborhoods. So we did a lot of research online. Internet's great now because you can get into Facebook networking groups and pretty much pick anyone's brain on like a location and whether this is a good location or a bad area. So that's kind of like our general single family detached lower end.
So once you picked Florida, you kind of looked at different counties. And then within that, you kind of already had your established like, when you say lower end, do you have a specific, like we weren't willing to buy homes above this range or above this price point?
I mean, I just didn't have a lot of capital. So I was kind of priced if I wanted to pay cash for something lower, but also your return is just so much better if you do stay in like, I guess the lower end. Now for the right price, I would buy anything, but I guess I'm always looking at like what my return would be. You know, if I could only put 100,000 into it versus $400,000 and I can get the same return, I'd rather just put the $100,000 into it.
Yeah. So were you looking at price, like say you were purchasing under $100,000, did the home have to be valued at a certain amount? What kind of comps? How are you?
So originally I was getting them a lot cheaper.
Oh yeah. That's a good point.
Market value. In 2015, I was getting them probably like 25, 50 cents to the dollar. Now it's closer to 75, 80 cents to the dollar. So prices have increased dramatically, but it was like before the recession was caused a lot by a housing recession. Like the housing market took a huge hit. So we were able to kind of take advantage of that. Now there hasn't been recessions, or that's up for debate, I guess. So and it's not fully, I think the recession we're going into now isn't fully based on the housing market. There are a lot of other factors taking place. The housing hasn't taken a great hit at this time.
So that's interesting that you mentioned too, because I think, again, I always kind of tie it back to what people are hearing and seeing when they read those flashy news stories of like overnight success. Their market conditions really impact how much success you're going to have at a given time. And you've been in this for a decade. I mean, you've seen in 2015, when you started in Florida, how much cheaper it was to purchase properties and how much more like equity you had versus now. And then I'd imagine that, and this will kind of lead into the rehab, which is I know probably your favorite part, the construction costs have gone way up and just like the delays and finding someone. So when you first started in Florida, how did you figure out who to work with? Like if they were good, if they made sense cost-wise, if they were quick, like how did you find them and how did you kind of figure out how to manage all those contractors from basically across the country?
So I knew a little bit about the rehab process, I guess, prior to going into it, just from managing properties in California and kind of seeing it firsthand and having that initial one. So I bought the first one in like 2011, 2012, and didn't buy any more until 2015. So I had rehabbed that one at least once in that time frame. So I kind of knew like how to go about starting a rehab, I guess you could say. And then it was just a matter of calling a lot of different contractors, talking to a lot of different people, and you start to get a feel for who is kind of BSing you and who's not. And then you need to find someone that essentially you trust to be your eyes at the property. So there's definitely vendors that we trust a lot and kind of have used them and relied on them to be our eyes and ears on the property, you know, like our AC. Once we figured out we had a good AC company, now when they go to service something, I can be like, hey, so take a look at the property when you're in there. How does it look? Is the tenant keeping it up? And that's kind of just a way I've been able to work without being physically there and doing an inspection myself, is kind of relying on the vendors. But the internet's been a great tool in that. I mean, you can search.
Yeah, I didn't even think about
that. The internet has allowed this to happen, I would say. 20 years ago, you wouldn't be doing this because there are just so many internet tools you can use now and reviews online that you can find. And if someone's done something bad to someone, they're going to write a review online and you're going to see it and know to kind of stay away. So it kind of, I mean, the downside is you have to realize you're going to take a hit every once in a while and it's not going to work out how you wanted it to, or someone's going to screw you over. It's happened, but that's just kind of, I guess, we're hoping to buy them at such a low price that we kind of factor in some errors, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Do you have, like, when you were speaking with people who you'd potentially want to hire as a vendor, do you have specific questions that you're asking them that you like kind of go through as like your top 3, 4, or 5 questions that are like important to know, other than obviously
cost? It really
cost?
Just depends who. I guess at this point, I'm trying to remember when I first started. Like at this point, I know if someone says something is going to cost a certain amount and it's way out of this league, I just know that they're not going to work for me. I guess knowing what things cost is going to be your biggest advantage not being there. Like if you know what the hourly rate should be and how long it would take to install a toilet per se, like then you can kind of go, okay, a toilet's going to be X amount of materials. It should take them 2 hours to install it. My cost should be approximately X. And so then I start asking handymen, you know, like, well, when I'm talking to them, what do you charge to install a toilet? What do you charge to do this? And then you can kind of get an idea of is this someone I could work with? Are their prices, do they sound like they know what they're doing?
Yeah.
Are their prices on point?
So I like that example, even finding like one thing, like changing a toilet and using that as like your benchmark. Cause I would imagine if they're going to overprice you on changing a toilet, they're going to overprice you on everything. Overprice, yeah. Overcharge. Okay. Can you give me an example, or do you have a story of like where something went really wrong?
First property I purchased had an HOA.
Don't say that.
Had an HOA that wouldn't allow me to rent it for 2 years after purchasing it. So I had a down property for 2 years.
Okay.
First property. So wow. I bought it and it just sat for 2 years before I could rent it.
I'd imagine you always make sure there's no HOAs or rules with renting since then.
Yeah. There's pros and cons to HOAs, but that's an added fee, and they can change your regulations a little bit, and they can tell you HOAs are always changing. So they can't say that you can't, that rentals aren't allowed. So things are kind of changing rapidly right now with that. And so HOAs kind of, you have to make sure you're reading your bylaws before you are purchasing a property in one.
Okay. That's good to know. So that was like a rental. That's an interesting one. I wasn't actually, didn't think that's kind of the example you'd give. What about like a rehab gone wrong?
Have plenty of those. we have someone when we in Florida that was like just stringing us along for a long time. And so I don't know if it went wrong, like it eventually got done, but I mean, it could have been done a lot quicker.
And at that point you could have had
not
a rent
being there. He had to get like a permit, and you know, we weren't sure. I guess you never really know if they're pulling the permit or not. And so he was kind of telling us it was taking all this time, or he needed more money for a permit, and come to find out, he never even pulled the permit. So, I mean, you kind of just have to be careful. And I will say that we do have people check. So if I have this person doing the full rehab, I'm going to have like another realtor in the area, which are a good resource to use. Hey, can you go and take pictures of this property and do a full inspection on this property for me? Like before I send payment to the handyman, I want to know that it was done well and correctly, and as they said they were going to do it.
Okay, awesome. So that's like another, I feel like, good piece of advice is not only like if you're not there, calling the realtors in the area. I know like I've done that with houses in the past, to just go by and take pictures and make sure like everything's moving along. Okay, and then so let's move on to management of the properties. So you self-manage all your properties, I assume?
Yes.
Okay. And you manage properties in Florida and California. So do you find that it is harder in a specific state? Do you find it's harder being out of state? What are some like pros and cons, I guess, to each of those?
I can't visually see them. So I am relying on someone else to tell me. And everyone's standard of like what is good is going to be different. So something that I might think needs more repair, or the paint's wearing or whatever, some other person might think this is like totally fine. So I am relying out of state on like someone else's eyes to tell me like a condition of a property, or even like things that need to be fixed. I'm relying on other people. If a vendor knows I'm out of state, he might think like, oh, I can tell him that this needs way more work put into it than it really does, because I can't visually go in and check in on them. Yep. Here in California, when I rehab a property, like before I send payment, I'm the one going out and checking and making sure, you know, the tile was installed correctly. Or if they, even just simple things as like a move-in. Move-ins have probably been the hardest part not doing, because that's where the liability comes in with a tenant. And so here I am doing like a full video of the property. I'm opening everything. I'm checking everything, taking hundreds of pictures of everything. And there, no matter how many times I tell them I want 100 pictures, I still end up with like 20 of them in. And then I kind of, you get stuck when you have to refund a security deposit, you know, if you don't have good enough notes prior to a move-in. So I would say that's like the hardest part, is relying on other people for that.
Move-ins.
But again, it's really just trial and error, finding the right person to do it for you. And you'll know when you found the right person. But again, you know, just like when you find the right person, they switch jobs, or so it's always, it's ever evolving. I will say that there are apps now, and I do have one called Z Inspector, where you pretty much have someone log in and walk through, check the front door, does the lock work? Just these little things you don't think of, but You know, if you have several doors where the locks are broken and little things can add up with a tenant moving in or out, and you want to be able to know who and where to place the blame.
So now for the ones that are out of state, you said you have an app that you use that you've kind of created like a checklist for whoever's going through.
It's made for property managers, and it basically has like a basic checklist for a move-in inspection that you would go through. And it allows you to upload a photo and write a note, take videos. So they can go through and it says like bedroom one, and then it gives you all the things you need to check for that bedroom. How's the closet? How are the closet doors? How are the windows? How are the screens on those windows? Does the window lock? So it gives you kind of like a checklist of items to check, because there's all these little things that you don't think of. Even as a tenant, you don't really think of until it comes down to someone having to pay for it. And then it's like, well, was that screen ripped prior to the tenant moving in? Or did the tenant have a pet that ripped the screen? You know, just like these little things that when a tenant moves out and you're trying to get rent ready for the next person, you need to know who and what caused it, I guess.
Yeah. So you've been in this for a while. For people, like, were there any times where you were discouraged or like, I don't know, like, does this even make sense? Is this the right direction? Or have you always been like steadfast moving forward? I know this is the right thing.
I mean, deep down, I know it's the right thing.
Yeah.
But tenants can be awful and people can be awful. So you kind of like, I used to take things to heart at the beginning. And I guess it has made me a little cold or cynical now, but I don't take everything to heart. You have to let things go. And really, basically, I've learned a lot of patience and letting things go. I mean, definitely it's caused a lot of stress. And I mean, big risk, big reward, little risk, little reward. I guess property management, putting my own money into it has helped me on the property management side, because I know what investors have in it. When you put your own money into something, it becomes your little baby. So
yeah, I mean, for sure.
I know deep down it's the right call.
But you never had a time where you're like,
the benefits outweighed the negatives.
Yeah. So you've never had a time where you were like, I'm done. Nope, never again.
No, not really.
Okay.
And I've gone through a lot. I've had a tenant cause a fire in the mobile home.
I mean, we don't talk about the specifics very often, you and I, but like, I know that you've dealt with like literally just about every type of scenario that you could. And again, dealing with tenants in California, it's not always the greatest. So I'm sure that hasn't been great. Okay. When you were looking, like, why Florida? I didn't really ask that in the beginning, but for people who are looking at different states, like, what attracted you to Florida?
There's no income tax and I don't live there. So it's not, no income tax, I guess, is beneficial to me. Also, just go do your research. And if you go online, you'll see that Florida is like one of the top places to invest. So, I mean, I'm not like reinventing the wheel, I guess, here. There's a lot of other smarter people that you can, I will say getting a mentor is probably a good idea and start asking them questions, learning what your criteria is. You know, are you going for a single family detached? Are you going for a mobile home? Are you going for an Airbnb? What are you looking for long-term? Are you looking for short-term? Are you looking to rehab and sell it? So just, I guess, for our model and our price range, this is what made the most sense for us.
Okay.
Also on the market.
I guess that's, again, I keep saying this, like another good point is, so you had your model and Florida fit that model. So if people don't have a specific model, then maybe looking at multiple states to figure out what fits their model would make sense. But for you guys, you chose Florida because it hit all the boxes of your criteria that you were looking for. I mean, because you invested there in 2015 and you're investing there again now. Is it harder to find property now? Because you said you can read a ton of articles and everyone's saying, go to Florida, go to Florida. So do you feel like it's like harder for you to acquire something that meets your criteria?
Yes, because we're not in as much of a recession as we were before. There are still a lot of people out there purchasing property. Before, when we were purchasing, there were a lot less people purchasing. So there was a lot more supply, thus it being a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
But now we're going up against a lot of other people who are purchasing. And so it's a lot more competitive in that. So it's definitely been interesting wrapping my head around buying something now for what I bought and put something in to have it fully rehabbed before. So what I'm purchasing at now, I was all in for before. And now I'm purchasing it at that price and having to then spend on rehab. And the cost of everything is just also.
Yeah. On that point, do you budget a certain amount for rehab? So if your property's worth, let's just use like 100K, do you say I need a certain percentage for rehab? Or is it, I guess, vary a little, obviously property to property, depending on condition, but do you kind of have like at bare minimum, I'm going to need this amount?
Yeah. I mean, I always try and give myself more than I'll probably need. Okay. So I don't want to run out of money. But when we look at a property, there are some big ticket items you look at.
Okay.
Like, does it need a new roof? That's a big one. If it does, then you're going to need a budget accordingly for the size of the home. Does it need a new AC system? How's the AC system? Those are like two big ones that you're like, you don't want. I mean, not that other big items can't come up in the home, but the way we purchase them on auction sites, sometimes you can't see inside the home. So you're kind of hoping, but then also budgeting like per square foot. If I need to put in new flooring for this home, I'm going to need X amount of money. So I should save that. So I would say that we do save. There's not like a magic number because it does depend. But we look at the bigger items. If we need those, we mark those. And then I would say the additional, depending on the size of the home, an additional $10,000 for potential rehab inside the home.
Okay. So you set aside money, you have your budget set aside for what you might need in terms of rehab. And you mentioned here a bit earlier that you buy these off auction site. Is there any particular, like, you obviously have your criteria, but when you're purchasing at auction, that means, can you tell our listeners essentially what that means?
We're purchasing them at foreclosure auctions online. So okay. Properties that are foreclosed, so they could or could not have tenants in them or previous owners, I guess, as well. So it is kind of a gamble. That's why we want to purchase them for not market value, because there is some rehab and or scenarios you might have, you run into purchasing a property at an auction. But we are reviewing the properties and getting a value for the properties and then seeing what the market value is and then trying to undercut that. But there are a lot of people bidding on these properties.
Can you finance this or do they have to be cash?
Yeah. So auction properties have to be cash.
Okay. So when you're doing that, that's probably why, like you said, there's more rehab that could go into it than necessarily buying a property that you're financing, because it's probably...
Yeah. So if you're financing, it has to pass an inspection. But for cash, it can be completely run down.
Okay.
We've run into both scenarios where it's been absolutely run down. Everything needs to be done. And then we run into situations where it's in pretty great condition and there's very little work that needs to go into it to get it rented. So the auction is a gamble. I mean, we do research. We try and have people drive by, but there's only so much you can do if you don't have access to the property. We're pulling permits and title and all that stuff on the back end to see, was there a roof redone recently in Florida? They're very strict on permits. So usually people pull permits for everything because they're required to. So we can kind of gauge based on that. But again, we're trying to get them cheap, hoping that if we have to, we can then put a little money into them and still be under market value.
Yeah. So in kind of to like wrap up the show, if you were to meet with someone who was looking to get into long-term rentals in-state or out-of-state, I guess, what would your number one like action tip for them be? Like, what should they actually do to get started? Maybe it's not like invest in a property, but like, we just try to give actionable tips that people can take away and actually go ahead and implement. So what would your number one tip be for people who are looking to get into long-term rentals?
I would say to find a mentor who does exactly what you want to be doing and just start asking questions. Find someone that has maybe just even one, but they've done it, and just start asking questions and research. Don't believe everything you read. Know what they're talking about is in the industry, I would say. I started off working for someone and just kind of learning the business before I actually got into it. So I think if you learn the business before you get into it, it's helpful. You're always going to run into stuff, but it gives you a good base.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier, and I think kind of this ties into that, and this is something that we've talked about on a previous episode, is like the power of networking and getting in, especially like you said, Facebook groups. Like if you're interested in a specific state, go to those Facebook groups. There has to be someone in there who you can connect with.
I'm in Facebook groups for every county that we've invested in. You just get resources. You have other investors. I mean, I've used this for vendors. You have other investors who are doing the same thing I'm doing, who have a great AC person. Like, so you know, I write in, like, does anyone know of a good handyman in this area? And I'll get 15 leads right there. Are they all good? No, because I have my own criteria. But I mean, it's a start and it's word of mouth. And usually, you know, other investors are not looking to screw other investors over. And so it's been helpful. For sure, the internet's a powerful tool.
Yeah. Awesome. So your tip would be find a mentor, network, and ask a ton of questions to learn from someone who has done it, not someone who talks about doing it.
Yeah. And just be patient.
Yeah. Patience is key. Like, again, you've been in this a decade and have a ton of experience and are still probably learning new things every time you acquire a property or rehab it. But I think that that is the hardest thing is patience and like taking that first step. Well, with that, thank you everyone for joining us today on this episode of the CWS podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend, subscribe, or leave us a review. Thank you, Nicole.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining Lauren and I on this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. Each week, we bring you expert education, experience, and information in a digestible format to help you identify investment opportunities so you can build wealth through real estate and take action toward your financial goals. Enjoy the show, share with a friend, or subscribe to the show and leave us a review.